Over the last few weeks, there is one news story in particular which has seemed to have dominated the headlines, and that's the story of baby Charlie Gard. As you'll know, Charlie was diagnosed with a rare genetic condition shortly after he was born, and then as the disease has progressed and Charlie's condition has worsened, he's been at the centre of a legal battle regarding his treatment and also regarding who has the right to determine what's best for him. Sadly, of course, Charlie died a few days ago, again, I'm sure you've heard, after the decision was upheld that his life support should be removed. It's been a highly controversial and emotive case. I know we've discussed it at home multiple times in the last few weeks. Charlie's parents have made it clear that they have been fighting for his life, and that fight has been played out in public, watched by a global audience, provoking religious, political, and ethical discussions about all sorts of things like the right to life, euthanasia, the use and abuse of power, human rights, the rationing of healthcare, and professional judgments that are driven by profit. I think what's caught my attention this week is the rhetoric around the word fight. Charlie's parents were fighting. Charlie himself was described as an absolute warrior, and the legal case was described as a battle. Earlier this week, I sat down to write this sermon on Elijah, and I reread the chapters that come immediately before the verses that we heard, and I noticed that they tell a story about a fight. They tell a story about a fight that is played out in public, a fight that is focused on one individual, which provokes intense, even ferocious, religious discussion about what is right. If you're unfamiliar with the story of Elijah, the people of Israel are being governed by a king called Ahab. He's described as an evil king because he has led God's people to worship Baal, a false god. And God chooses Elijah to be his prophet, his person, to confront the people and make them choose between Baal and the true God. And this leads to a great showdown between the two, a public fight where Elijah calls down fire from heaven and then the people turn back to God. And in a show of power, Elijah has 450 prophets of Baal slaughtered, and then King Ahab's wife Jezebel threatens to kill Elijah as an act of revenge. And that brings us to the start of the reading that we heard. But as I read the story of Elijah's very public fight on Mount Carmel, I kept returning in my mind to the case of Charlie Gard. And as I read on in 1 Kings 19, as I read the bit that we heard read by Laurie, it made me think about the impact that a fight can have on you, the toll that it can take. I don't want to talk about the rights and wrongs of the Charlie Gard case because I'm not even sure I know what they are. But it does feel to me as if we need to talk about the impact that these moments can have on people, to think about the impact on the parents, us even listening to the news. I want to think about the fallout from a fight, especially when a fight has such high stakes. The case of Charlie Gard isn't the only fight that's been in the headlines. Over the past few weeks, we've heard about the residents of Grenfell Tower who are continuing to fight for justice. We've also heard this week about the ongoing fight for equality for LGBT people. And then away from the headlines, I reflected on the conversations that I've had with people this week. I've talked to people involved in custody battles for their children, people fighting cancer or other illnesses, people involved in workplace disputes, people living with confrontational neighbours, people who are clashing with the council over funding for services. It makes me realise that so many of us spend so much time fighting. And I don't mean fighting in the sort of negative connotations. I mean fighting for things that are good and right. And fights like that are absolutely exhausting. Over the last few Sundays, we've thought about the theme of rest. And so for the remainder of this talk, I want to look at the impact of the battle on Elijah and then how God responds. And in so doing, I want to think about our lives and perhaps the fights that we're caught up in, what the impact might be on us and how we respond as Christians. So after the great victory on Mount Carmel, when Elijah calls down this fire from heaven, his life is under threat, and so he chooses to run away. And the writer of Kings gives us a very vivid picture of what it was like for Elijah. It's a very human picture. And I've picked out four things from that description that strike me as being fallout from the fight. Firstly, we're told in verse 3 that Elijah was afraid. We often talk about fight or flight responses to stress. And so perhaps it's no surprise that Elijah chose to run away. Because often if we've been involved in a fight, fear and the anxiety that comes from fear are a natural response to those sorts of conflicts. Secondly, Elijah experiences a sense of despair. In verse 4, we're told that he goes to the wilderness, he sits down under a tree and he prays that he might die. I have had enough, Lord, he says. Again, I find the honesty of emotion in this passage so very helpful. So we've got fear and we've got despair. Thirdly, Elijah is utterly exhausted. We're told twice that he lies down under the bush to sleep. And that sort of exhaustion or fatigue is often something that people experience if they've had a period of depression. And then the fourth and final thing I've picked out is isolation. In verse 10, Elijah says to God, you know, Lord, I'm the only one left. That feeling that you are going through this thing all by yourself. So four feelings: fear, despair, exhaustion, and isolation. I suspect that all the people who've been caught up in the Charlie Gard case have experienced at least one of those things, be it his parents, the lawyers that have represented each side, the staff at Great Ormond Street who just last week we heard had received death threats, or the judge. Whichever side you are on, fights are incredibly costly. And you might be able to identify those feelings in your own life as well. If you reflect on the last few months, if you think perhaps of the battles that you have been caught up in, you may well be feeling those things too. Fear, despair, exhaustion and isolation. So let's look at how God responds. Again, I picked out four things. The first thing I noticed is that God's response is a practical one. In verse 6, God sends an angel to Elijah who gives him some bread and a jar of water. If you look in some of the other translations, it describes it that he gives him a cake, which I always thought was wonderful because if I'm miserable, I always want cake. But there's something really again, very human about that. He lets him lie down again to rest. And sometimes what we need when we've been engaged in an ongoing struggle is we need someone to care for our practical needs, to give us a decent meal, especially if we live alone and have to always cook for ourselves. Or we need someone else to pick up our responsibilities so that we can have a rest. And I truly believe that practical responses like this have a spiritual significance. And I love that the first thing that God does is attend to Elijah's physical needs. Secondly, God leads the worn-out Elijah to Mount Horeb, a place that has spiritual significance for their people. And there, God speaks to him, we're told, in a gentle whisper. Because God understands that Elijah is worn out from the fight. Elijah actually doesn't need another great display of power. He's seen God rain down fire from heaven. He's seen God send rain after a drought. He doesn't need a big booming voice. He doesn't need to be overawed by God. Quite the opposite. Elijah needs someone to be gentle with him. And God speaks in a gentle whisper. Thirdly, God reminds Elijah he's not alone. In verse 18, which comes a little bit after the reading that we heard, he says this, "Yet I reserve 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal." So Elijah's perception is that he is totally alone, and yet God is saying, "You're not. You are part of this bigger community of believers. You're not alone." I'll come to the fourth and final response in just a moment. So many of us spend so much time fighting, and it is quite exhausting. I think every week people come along to our church because they are engaged in struggles in life, and they are looking for something, some kind of relief or reprieve from the struggle, something that will help them cope with the fallout of the fight. And perhaps some of you are here this morning, weary from the battles that you've been part of. And I want to suggest that the things that God offers to Elijah are things that we can offer to one another and to others who might come to this place. We can offer practical help, cake, water, practical things so that people can rest. We are also a community that people can belong to, where they can be reminded that they are not alone. And I know it takes a while sometimes to get to know people and settle in, but we are not alone. Now, our churches are never going to be the sorts of churches, I don't think, where we witness fire from heaven. I could be wrong, and maybe in 10 minutes' time, fire will fall from the roof onto the altar. I don't think so, though. But I just wonder whether we might be a place where people who are bruised from the fight can come here and hear the gentle whisper of God. I wonder if that's a gift about this place, that when you're bruised and weary and hurting, that God is here and he is very gentle. The final thing that God does for Elijah is actually he sends him back to the place that he's just come from. And he sends him back with a renewed sense of purpose to continue his fight. That won't be right for all of us. For some people, we're engaged in a battle and we need time of rest. We need a time to pull back from that. But for others of us, actually, God says, I am calling you to pursue justice and pursue truth and pursue peace and pursue wholeness. And so for some of us, he will send us back out tomorrow morning just as he sent Elijah back out. We live in a world with a great deal of moral ambiguity. We live in a world where what is right isn't always clear. And even if we think what is right is clear, it can still be hugely costly. And the case of Charlie Gard is evidence of that. What I know is that those two parents hit the headlines, but there are countless people that live meters from this place who are hurting just as much. It's just that their fight isn't public. But they're desperately in need of the things that we can offer to one another. Practical care. An encounter with a gentle God who knows what we need when we are bruised. A community to belong to. It's not a perfect community. We're not perfect. But you don't have to be alone. And the encouragement to keep going in the fight. Amen.